He has ideas you might not agree with, but his passion for knowledge and advancement can make anyone envy of him. He has a habit of making controversial statements and make giants cry. His obsession for evidence-based training makes him a shining star of Indian fitness industry. Let's hustle with the hustler himself today, only at Road to Revamp. Please welcome Mr. Vineet Baptist.
Welcome, Vineet, to Road to Revamp podcast.
Thank you so much.
I'm your host, Abhishek. So, Vineet, we were trying to, you know, get the hold of you for the last many months.
Yes.
And eventually, we got you. So, you are very known in Calcutta fitness fraternity and countrywide.
Mm-hmm.
But still, tell us something about you.
Okay. So, I've started personal training about 4 or 5 years back.
Mm-hmm.
That was just freelancing earlier. And then I did a few certifications in the beginning. I did ACE and the CrossFit Level 1 to start up. Then I realized that that's not the end, and to keep updating myself. Also, I'm pretty self-learned that way because I read up a lot and keep myself updated. Then a year after that, Zest happened, where I opened a studio near Kadai Road, which started off really well. It's still going amazing. And then 2 more gyms happened simultaneously at the second year. And then it's been going pretty well from then. And now we have a good team. We're managing pretty well. And it's also, we make sure we update trainers so that the quality is always up and, you know, clients are satisfied.
I see, like, every year you're doing some really repetitive certification. Like last year you were in Robot Seminar.
Yes.
This year with Andrew Spina.
Yes. So yeah, with Andrew Spina, I just finished that in last October, and I really thought that, you know, it was really, really important for me to do that, because, you know, it's something which very few people look at mobility in a different way. And after going there, it was really an eye opener for me about how physical therapists are unaware of things, and, you know, how they're using single inputs on them to actually manipulate them and making them more dependent on them, you know, coming to their chambers more often than they have to. And they have to spend more time inside the gym. And the gym is not a place where, you know, just you lift weights and become like a bodybuilder. It's a little more than that. It's much more than that.
Okay. We'll get back to functional range conditioning again. I want to understand more about fitness entrepreneurship.
Okay.
Which you just did really well. Like 3 fitness centers in a very short time.
Mm-hmm.
So, it must be really hard work.
It was really hard work initially. I used to sleep like 4 hours on the first year of when Zest happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just focused on, you know, working every single day, getting up, doing the same thing over and over again. And yeah, it did take a toll on my health as well in the first year. But then that's when I actually thought of the long run, and, you know, I don't want to burn out. And the main thing was maintaining quality, as I already mentioned. And that's what I did, and it worked out for me that way, I guess. And there are a few members who I have now. They have become my trainers.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually really, really, I saw that passion in them and that drive in them. The young chaps, they're learning. And they're doing really well with me. So that really helped me, you know, get my team better. And without a team, I guess nothing can grow. Can't grow as a single person.
Like, we are talking about fitness entrepreneurship.
Yes.
I see gyms opening every week.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they're closing every week.
Yes.
So how do you manage everything so successfully? Some secrets or some ideas which you want to share with fitness entrepreneurs?
I guess I did a lot of homework when it came to if the gym would run or not, depending on the kind of investments the gyms nowadays they have inside the gym is just crazy. It's off the roof, because it doesn't make sense business wise, because that's probably one of the reasons they get closed down.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of overheads and the costs they keep every month is just too much to handle. And that's where I focused on more quality training and then less of a 5-star hotel inside the gym. And I think that's what's worked for me, and I'm managing to sustain pretty well.
You didn't get any, you know, like people come in the gym and they give that sinister look, oh my god.
Yes, I have gotten that a lot, where, oh, where's the steam, where's the sauna, where's the treadmill. And I have somehow managed to explain them. I wouldn't say I converted all of them into members, but I lost a few. Mm-hmm. But then it's all about educating them and telling them, okay, you know, steam and sauna wouldn't transfer to etc. And a treadmill is not a compulsion inside a gym. So yeah, that's what I mean. Motion gym always can have it, but I just prefer not to have a treadmill inside a gym.
Because training can be done
without a treadmill.
Without anything, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we just did something like that. So, in Calcutta, you are one of those trainers who started this functional fitness trend.
Yeah.
And you took it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
There are people,
yeah,
they're doing great work, but you, like, I see your presence on social media emphatically.
Yeah.
And so, convincing people for functional fitness, how do you do that? If someone comes to your gym and they see that iron rods and only mats and bumper plates, how do you convince them?
I just simply tell them that, you know, being around a machine and for 1 hour inside the gym would not basically transfer to real life, or that's not transferring to your day-to-day activity, because you're not restricted to one path ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many multifactorial, you know, there's a lot of variation, there's a lot of degree of variations you need to have in life.
Right.
And free weights do obviously give you that, free space gives you that, and you can do a lot of things. You have more to do in a space where you have, you can move around in different planes.
Right.
Instead of just, you know, fixing yourself into one machine and moving it up and down, or, you know, horizontally or vertically.
Okay.
So I think transfer wise, that's what I think functional means.
Okay.
If it's not functional to your day-to-day activity, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're doing bodybuilding, and, you know, that's a different story altogether.
Okay. So for you, what is functional fitness for you? Not for your clients, not for anybody else.
For me?
For you.
For me, see, honestly speaking, I have been always been an athlete from school, and I've always been pretty fit, always been okay, very mobile as well. So I never had to work on mobility so much. But then, yeah, for me, it's about all of aspects. I think I couldn't want to say, but yeah, CrossFit actually taught me a few characteristics of fitness, where, you know, you have to work on strength, power, speed, acceleration, balance, coordination. And honestly, if someone's calling themselves fit or aiming to become fit, I mean, they should look at most of these characteristics: endurance, stamina. And I aim for all of that. And if person ticks the most of all the characteristics, then I consider the person fit.
Okay. Nice. You are, as far as I see, you are a transformation expert.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
Just fitness.
Yes,
transformation. Yeah. So what is transformation, like body transformation?
Yes.
How do you, you know, go about it if someone comes?
Okay, so basically when a client comes in and is looking for a transformation, we set realistic goals firstly. We don't tell them in X amount of months or weeks we will get you there.
Mm-hmm.
We just tell them, we do speak to them about the troubles they're having, about why are they not being able to stick to a nutrition plan.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them, see what the problem is, where the problem area is, and then see to that how we can solve it through nutrition and through obviously physical training inside the gym. And after they stick to the plan, mostly 90% of the time, we do see results. And that's how people transform. And I think it's not very complicated when it comes to transforming and becoming aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Health markers and being aesthetic are two very different things, I feel. If you're just showcasing six-pack abs and not healthy, or not even strong or mobile, I don't think it makes sense. Because aesthetics is just how you look outwardly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have anything inside, there's no point of being aesthetic. So I think it's overall health which also matters, not just aesthetics. So we transform person not just from the outward appearance, but also from inside.
So this is inside out transformation. Yes. Not outside in.
Yes. Yes.
That's great. So, if I'll give you an example, someone came to you and they have 15, someone is 15 kg overweight.
Okay.
And female.
Okay.
How do you go about her, give this idea to, you know, those budding trainers
okay.
who are trying to learn this art?
Female, a big complication in females, even clients get worked up, trainers get worked up when it comes to nutrition and when it comes to day following or dieting. More often than not, they actually see a lot of up and down on the scale because of a lot of water retention, stress, cortisol. It could be a lot of things. It could be anything to do with menstrual cycle. So they retain a lot of water, and the graph is not trending downwards always.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when female and the trainer themselves, they get worked up. Mm-hmm. So I think if you consistently are actually dieting, and that's a term which you need to look at properly, because usually clients either overrepresent the activity level or underrepresent their calories.
Mm-hmm.
So if they check on that properly again and again, and if they know they are on a caloric deficit, the process is happening, the fat loss is happening. You just need to wait for it, be a little more patient, because the scale will go up and down, especially for women. Compared to men, it fluctuates a lot. So they just need to wait for a bit and be a little more patient. And when it comes to trainers, they need to be informing their clients about these things also, so that, you know, they don't get frustrated. And that, I think that's what leads to lack of compliance in the diet, when they not see results, and they just go off completely.
So even in my practice, I have realized this thing. People come for only fat loss, and if they are unable to lose or, you know, transform themselves in 3 weeks, they start going back to their previous routine. Like, let's have some fuchka again. It's not working on me. So, this is an unhealthy attitude towards life.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, how do you transform their brain? Transform their daily habits.
So we always keep in touch with the clients over WhatsApp or whichever medium, and constantly ask them what the progress is like, so that there is no miscommunication or gap there, so as to we can see if they are on the diet or not. That's not, I would say, a very emotional approach, but we are constantly in touch with each and every client that way, and we know if they are on point or they are getting frustrated, are they seeing results, and if they are not, we actually sit with them, we talk to them, where we're going wrong or where they're going wrong. We try to rectify that so that they get back on track again.
What are these simple methods can be to keep the calories in check?
I think choosing the right quality food, food which are nutritionally dense, which will keep you full for a longer period of time, high on fiber. Proteins should be at a higher because of the satiety level of the protein. Keeps you full so that you don't end up binge eating at the later half of the day, maybe. I guess those two simple things. You can keep a lot of veggies, green leafy vegetables especially, the cruciferous ones. That'll keep you full for a long period of time and keep your calorie intake on check. I think simple things. Water obviously is also a factor. So you should keep all of these things in mind. And again, choose whatever is most convenient to you. Low carb, low fat, ketogenic, IF, doesn't really matter.
As long as you are in calories.
Yes, you will see some change.
Okay. We find during this course of fat loss, transformation journey, we find people who are unable to lose fat even after following low calorie diet and following strict regime, and they have some hormonal issues like I was talking about thyroid PCOS.
Yes.
In such cases, how do you go about?
Okay, so here that's when we probably refer out to a doc and check, get the blood work done and see if actually that's the case or not. That's one. if that is the case, see, as whatever I've learned through nutrition till date is, mostly you do see results when it comes on a calorie deficit, and if someone is like, I'm not on a calorie deficit, we make sure we check it again.
Okay.
We either ramp up the activity level, because there's a limit to how much less food you can eat. And if you're dieting for too long, mostly the leptin usually falls down quite a bit, and then it just gets a stall to your entire process, progress. So, possibly people are not aware of this, maybe, you know, carbs does make a lot of impact when it comes to leptin again restarting, resetting, and that might help, you know, I wouldn't call it a cheat meal, but probably a refeed with a lot of carbs. Carb loading would really, really help resetting the entire leptin, the BMR, and getting you back on track again and making sure you see progress fast.
So you're saying that in a 7-day, so 5 days or 6 days, mm-hmm. you're sticking to a strict diet.
Yes, and you refeed yourself maybe on the 7th day or the 10th day.
With good carbohydrates.
Yes, obviously, good quality food. Because a cheat would mean junk. That's what the word suggests.
And the Maharaja Burger.
Okay. So, the way leptin works,
yeah.
How does insulin
mm-hmm.
and leptin,
mm-hmm.
we can make them a friend? Like leptin, you suggested
yeah,
how to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
How to make this another so, bugger a friend?
Yeah, I think insulin, as far as I know, according to whatever studied recently, is that insulin doesn't make such a big impact on when it comes to directly using fat
mm-hmm.
or reducing body fat. It does indirectly play a role, mm-hmm. but not directly. So when it comes to insulin, we will just choose the right quality of carbs maybe,
mm-hmm.
so that it's stabilizing your blood sugar level, and that way your insulin level would be in control automatically.
Like low glycemic
food? Yes, low glycemic load food, and automatically your insulin levels should be in place. But again, as I said, it's not directly taking a part in the fat loss process. So we shouldn't even look at that in too much of depth, because people get too worked up with when it comes to insulin. That the insulin is low or insulin is high, and you know, you have to take care of the insulin. It's not so much about the insulin then it comes, it's more about leptin when it comes to fat loss
okay.
in the long run. When they're actually dieting,
mm-hmm.
not so much about the insulin. So if they actually on a cal, so in short, if they're on a calorie deficit for a long period of time, the leptin obviously becomes, it's basically down-regulated. And to reset that, refeed with some good quality carbs, get it resetted, your BMR leptin goes up again, and then you should be back on track once again.
So have you seen any case in which the BMR is going rapidly low and it is not coming back? And, you know?
As of now, honestly, I haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I am not aware of the BMR going very, very low. Probably because of adaptive thermogenesis, the BMR is adapting really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that person could be kept on a carb cycle where, you know, the person gets a carb maybe more often than the person is not taking it well. So that their BMR doesn't drop too much. But also making sure there is a net calorie deficit is great.
So, if we are talking about FRC, we
mm-hmm.
cannot avoid, and we cannot, you know, forget carbs.
Of course, controlled
artificial
utilization. Yes. So carbs is used for every single joint. It's got multiple functions. Honestly,
mm-hmm.
it's got it's used as an assessment tool also.
Mm-hmm.
As where you lack in any kind of joint, you make sure you rotate it and see where you're lacking. And trainers could also, FRC specialists could also teach the clients on how to actually self-assess their mobility and their range while you're doing cards,
mm-hmm.
looking for closing angle pains. So whenever your angle is getting shorter, if you are getting any kind of pain
mm-hmm.
or hindrances there, you should always look at the opposite side where the tissue might have become a little fibrotic.
Okay.
So that gives us an answer. Now, not only is it an assessment tool, cards, but also it helps us in maintaining joint range of motion. As we know, the cartilage doesn't have the best of blood flows compared to, say, like a muscular tissue. So delivering nutrients and diffusion of nutrients and O2 to the cartilages, they become pretty easy when it comes to moving the, you know, joint in a particular way in its actual range of movement. So that's the two functions. Third one would be obviously health and longevity of the joint. So these are the main important reasons why CARS is incorporated initially as an assessment tool also, and also to maintain joint health and joint range of motion.
Like I do CARS every day at least twice.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I would like to know more about CARS and why we do them in circular motion mostly.
Okay, so and axial rotations would be more to do with more capsule, you know, you target more capsule stuff. So when we talk about muscles, tissues, tendons, ligaments, we just call them stuff. You know why? Because everything is connective tissue.
Yeah.
That's the broad heading.
Yes.
So we just like calling them stuff instead of naming them anterior deltoid, middle deltoid, trapezius, yes, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So basically, the idea here is to... I forgot your question. What was that question?
Why circular motion?
Okay, why circular motion? Yeah. So axial rotation is basically when you're targeting capsules.
Okay.
When you see linear deficiencies, that is more to do with muscular tissues, muscular stuff. Okay, so then that's when we use isometric contraction. Then when we start using something called rails and pails.
Yeah.
So, but as Dre says, first you get better at CARS and then move into linear deficiencies. That means rails and pails.
Yeah.
So axial rotations are the best way to figure out about your joint health. Especially the internal rotations of the shoulder and hip tells you how your joint health is. How much of the joint spacing you have. You get to know, are there chances of you developing osteoarthritis also. So you can also control that. I wouldn't say you can reverse arthritis, obviously, but you can definitely control it with some solid CAR work every single day, possibly thrice a day if possible.
Yeah.
The frequency could be any, because since it's very low on intensity, there is no prescribed number of reps or number of sets. You could do it any time of the day.
Okay. So, somewhere I was reading about this thing that when you are doing, like, I was working on my shoulder extension. I have lower shoulder extension. So I was working on that, and someone from the functional range community, she suggested me when you are doing pails and weights, you should consider it as strength training.
Okay.
Not do these pails and rails like you do CARS.
Yes.
3 days,
yes.
Three times in a day. So, what is this?
Okay, so rails and pails, when we do rails and pails, it's all about contraction. It's all about irradiation. It's all about creating a lot of tension.
Right.
In FRC terms, we call it MVC, maximum voluntary contraction. And we're dealing with 100% maximum voluntary contractions. So, when it comes to that, it is quite taxing when we actually do it. And if we do, say in your case, shoulder extension, rails and pails, and do any kind of shoulder extension work in our exercise later in your training, that is kind of very, very taxing and you won't be able to be the best at it. Because in itself, rails and pails would be kind of an exercise, as you said. It is very exhausting. Unless you do it, we wouldn't be able to say it. Because CARS that way is very, there is less tension. There is tension, but there is less tension comparatively. But less exhausting as well. So you have more fuel to work out after that. But when it comes to rails and pails, it actually takes a lot out of you. So that is an exercise itself.
So that's why they say that.
Yeah. You can overtrain rails and pails if you do it more than once, because it takes a lot out of you.
Yeah, I have seen that. In my right hip, I used to have huge pain because I was doing 3 times CARS.
Okay.
And we do internal rotations, pain pails and rails.
So the best way to do rails pails on a daily basis is use 50% of MVC instead of 100% MVC. So an intermediate athlete or advanced coach like you would be able to control the MVCs better. So 50% would be meaning 50% of contraction of the way you were doing 100%. 100% can be done alternate days or every third day. But if you want to do it on a regular basis, rails and pails can be done. But it could be around the 50% MVC.
Okay, so not
non-human
percent. 100% daily?
Yes.
Like you don't do 1 rep max?
Exactly. Daily. Absolutely.
Okay. So, now let's come to, again, your individual training stuff. So, what is your favorite move in the gym?
Okay. So, my favorite move in the gym is back squats. I just love them.
Uh-huh.
It just gives me a high, honestly speaking. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But yeah, once I get into the bar, it just gives me a high. And nothing to do with, because it's the king of all movements, and you know, I'm not even getting into the argument of if deadlift is the king or the back squat is the king. But yeah, it just makes me feel good.
Yeah, for me, handstand is the king of all movements.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's very, very individual.
In the same way, what will be, like, you are busy.
Yeah.
You just said you used to sleep only 4 hours
yes.
a day. How do you manage your nutrition, or what is your go-to food, if I would say?
Right now, in the recent past, honestly, food is pretty messed up. But then, yeah, when I was actually dieting, the go-to food I used to have was sattu.
Oh.
And it was very convenient for me to just put a packet, just like a whey protein, and just mix it up with some water. And yeah, that was the most convenient way to just survive on some food or the other. But yeah, I do probably go home and have lunch, so I'll get my other good, proper, wholesome food. But then yeah, this was my go-to food when I was working at the gym and I was like very starved and famished.
Okay. What are your thoughts about sugar? Like you said, it's more about calories.
Mm-hmm.
Calorie deficit
yes,
is important.
Yes.
But there is a huge...
Yes.
agenda going against sugar.
But
in a way, I think sugar is not a healthy option.
Yes.
To sweet. So, what is your thoughts?
Honestly, my thoughts wouldn't matter, honestly, but science will matter.
Yeah.
But then, so the whole inflammation story, I'm still not very good with. I'm trying to pick up from other places, from my mentor, Martin McDonald, as well, who